everyone. This is Kevin Gianni, Optimal Health Expert, and I'd like to welcome you to another very special Raw Summit teleseminar, which can be found online at www.rawsummit.com. The purpose of the Raw Summit is to pass along cutting-edge information about raw and living food technologies for you to reach optimal health, wellness, and success. Today I have an incredible guest on the line. He's an author, chocolatier, alchemist, speaker, and founder of the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation. David Wolf has spent the last 15 years spreading the news of great health around the world, and it is such an honor to have him here with us today. So David, I want to welcome you aboard.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's a total pleasure.
I am excited about this call. I was talking to David before this call, and we're going to give you some stuff today that I don't even know if he's ever talked about ever. So we're really excited about this. So David, why don't you just give us a brief explanation for maybe people who don't know you that well, who you are and a little bit about your story.
Well, I started out as a son of two medical doctors, and I grew up inside a medical doctor's office, if you can imagine what that was like. And I've basically been with my dad on a huge array of different types of situations, from emergency medicine to automobile crashes to motorcycle wrecks to house calls. And I grew up in a very unique situation because of all those experiences. And that, I believe, is what oriented me towards natural health, because I never really believed that injecting something was really necessary. And I always felt that I was really the healthiest when I ate natural foods, and in particular the first time I ever had a fresh tangerine off a tree when we first came to Southern California in 1977. That was a real changing and turning point of my life. Over time I realized that I had dairy allergies, so I got off of dairy products when I was 18 or 19 years old completely. I took away all milk, all cheese, all eggs, everything, and immediately a lifetime of really troubling ear problems went away. And that's how I got really psyched and turned on to nutrition, because I thought, wow, everybody says that I'm supposed to be drinking milk, and here I stopped drinking milk and I feel better than ever. And I then turned on the reading light and went to work studying nutrition at a really intense level for about, you know, it's been about 15 years, maybe longer, and it's led me all the way to here, which is essentially a raw food, superfood, cacao, goji berry diet, and a very light diet that has a lot of water in it, a lot of hydration, and a lot more room for doing things and a lot less room for wasting time on making food or going out to restaurants or whatever.
And from what I know, you're moving into some amazing territory with the raw food and living food lifestyle, and this is a territory of success technology using these foods. Why don't you just start a little bit by telling us, you know, what the possibilities of that are?
Well, the phrase "you are what you eat" has never really been explored by pretty much anyone on the planet. Of course, there's been the great herbalists of China and North America and Europe and Asia and India, et cetera, et cetera. But those individuals are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of billions that have been on the planet. It's a very small number of people who've really become gastronauts, is the phrase we like to use. A gastronaut is an explorer of digestive possibilities. And "you are what you eat" is so profound when we really begin to moving into high vibrational foods and superfoods, because it shifts the fundamental quantum field of our whole body. Our body may be vibrating a certain level, and based on the food we're eating primarily, and then secondarily upon the media we're taking in, the love relationships and everything else that's around us, we then resonate at a certain frequency. Well, if we can get that food up to the highest frequencies possible, it becomes easier to love your neighbor. It becomes easier to feel good. It becomes easier to have fun. It becomes easier to smile. And it takes us out to this understanding that everything in our whole body, every cell in our body, every mineral came from somewhere. And if it came from food that was treated with greed, destruction, fire, microwaving, unconsciousness, then those cells and those tissues are created with some residue of those energies. And if the food transformed into something that's created with love and joy and happiness and is vibrating at the highest level, and then we consume that, then we can transform the quality of the vibration of every single cell in our body. And this is not only leading us even way beyond personal health. I mean, we've got the health thing completely sorted out. We have all the technology now to completely reverse anything that's going on inside anybody's body. But we're really taking it to the next step, which is beyond just getting into perfect health, which is like superhero level nutrition, where you feel so good every single day that you are activating your mission at a level that you never even could have conceived of before. And that's the download coming in to our times right now.
What an incredible philosophy. What are some of the ways that you can know that you're eating the foods that do help you raise that vibration?
Well, I think we have to start out with extreme basics, and the basics have to be in place for us to get anywhere. All the great coaches in history have always taught the basics over and over and over again, and those basics are raw plants. That's how we got started on this planet. I mean, it's way easier to sneak up on lettuce or a dandelion than it is a rabbit or a deer. It's way easier to eat wild berries than it is to shoot a bird. It's just simple kind of philosophy and understanding of what we're designed for. And if we take that understanding and propel it to its appropriate level, we can see that we have the possibility that we may have been constructed out of all the wrong stuff, and that if we got on the right stuff, everything could change for us and we could go through a personal transformation. The promise of food then is great. The simplicity begins with raw plants and just using our common sense in relationship to transitioning our diet. There's no rush, really. We just go step by step. And we start by one simple philosophy, and that is adding in those things that are good. That's it. We're not taking anything away. We're not telling you not to eat this, that, or the other thing. We're just saying, here, add these things in. And those include raw organic fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, seaweeds, sprouts, herbs, and superfoods. The last of those categories, the superfoods, is where we really are seeing major transformational shifts in new people. People who come in and used to try to guzzle, you know, 5 carrots and a big giant bowl of salad and then have 10 oranges don't really feel the same effects as the individual who comes in and starts eating cacao and goji berries and then supplements that with vegetable juice on top of their normal diet, whatever they're doing. When you do that kind of superfood diet, let's just say cacao and goji berries, cacao, of course, is raw chocolate, then what ends up happening is those foods are so nutritious, they're so intensely nutritious, they do the job that lettuce can't do, which is affect a feeling or state change, allow us to get into a higher vibration easier. That's where the superfood technology is really coming in. It's a lot more powerful to feed someone goji berries than it is to feed them an apple. They'll not feel an apple. They won't even notice anything different. But if you feed them goji berries, they go, whoa, this food really is affecting me.
With raw food and with people who aren't getting the results that they're getting, I've seen a lot of people who think that just eating raw, and you kind of alluded to it when you say carrots and some other thing, people who are just eating raw, what can you say to them to say, you know, Let's look, how can they find their niche in the raw industry, not the raw industry, but in the raw food world, and really get the results they want?
Okay, well, if people are having trouble, let's just say, for example, someone's too skinny.
Yeah.
They're too thin. And I personally believe that if you're too thin, that is not a sign of excellent health, that you need a little meat on your bones. You need a little bit of fat on your body to be healthy. And every woman knows that you can't really carry a baby all the way through a pregnancy unless you have some meat on your bones. If somebody's too thin and they've been eating raw food, then they're probably eating too many fruits and or vegetables and or sprouts. And they're not eating enough herbs, superfoods, and fats, and sometimes protein, which mm-hmm. would be in the form of superfoods in most cases, like hemp seeds, spirulina, bee pollen, etc. And I find this all the time, that what happens is people take in their prejudice, which might be, say, for example, a natural hygiene approach, which is you can live on fruits and vegetables, that's all you need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. and they drag that into their life kind of forcefully and force their body to fit that idea. And a lot of times that doesn't work because we need more than just fruits and vegetables, or it's possible that we can overeat fruits and vegetables and become either too alkaline, too thin, and not have enough meat on our bones, not have enough calories and protein and fat to really like have some mass. If we're in that situation, we can get onto superfoods and then get onto more of a blended food approach. Blended food opens up all that surface area of that food to your digestion, and it's already liquefied, so it's easy to absorb, comes in, and literally a giant Vitamix full or two Vitamix fulls of blended superfood smoothies is so much food that there's no way if you drink two blenders full of that stuff per day that you're not going to put on weight. I mean, you'll just start bulking up immediately. So that's just one issue that I see, and there are other ones. There's the other side. The other side is all superfoods and nothing else. And in that case, you end up bulking up too much, and you may not want to bulk up. You may want to thin down a little bit. So that's another case. And there are other little nuances that come up in the raw food circles, and each one of them is usually unique to the individual, but there are general statements that we can make. And one of them is make sure you have a wide array of everything and get out of judgment of like, oh, this is good, that's bad, this is what I need, that's what I don't need, et cetera, because you might be closing a door that you need to open.
So, for instance, if you think fat is bad, or if you don't need a lot of protein, you're saying maybe you do, and to kind of let go of it.
Exactly, right. Let go of the judgments or the programming or the book knowledge. You reach a point, for example, I've been a raw foodist for 13 years. Mm-hmm. My understanding of food combining is way beyond Dr. Shelton's deal that he did 50 years ago. I mean, at this point, I can combine any food in any combination, any time of the day or night, and not feel any side effects. I used to feel totally weird unless I combined food properly, meaning ate vegetables with any cooked food, it didn't combine fruits and vegetables together, et cetera, those food combining laws. Now that's just totally thrown out the window because my digestion is vastly improved. See, we're not just interested in getting people to normal digestion. Of course, we can do that. All the technology is here, and food combining is a great part of that. It's an important technology to know, but it is not the end all. It's just the beginning.
How can you separate the programming that you've gotten from books and all that and your intuition? How do you find out which is telling you what to do?
That's such a good question because that is essentially the dilemma that everybody is faced with.
Yeah.
And I believe that the best answer to that is continued experience and practice and really tuning into how you're feeling rather than what you're thinking. For example, if you're eating a food and you're thinking about a book that told you that spirulina is pond scum and you're eating spirulina, that's not congruent. That idea that you have in your mind is not in alignment with eating of that food because in the back of your mind is thinking, oh, this is not good for me because X, Y, and Z told me so. But if you're into your feeling state and you're looking at the food and going, you know what, intuitively I know I need this right now, and then you get out of mind. You just go to zero mind. You think about something else. You just distract yourself with something like your business or your computer or whatever. Then what will happen is that food comes in and it's completely accepted. It's completely utilized properly, and we get into a right relationship with food. My goal is to make everybody skilled enough to be able to be their own doctor, their own nutritionist, because all of us intrinsically have that inside of us.
It's amazing. I want to switch gears a little bit here. I want to talk about traveling and raw food. I know you travel all over the world. I'm sure you have some incredible insight for some of us people who have a little difficulty, particularly in third world countries, Peru, Mexico, going to places where it might not be great to get the bacteria that some of the foods have.
That's probably something I know more about than pretty much anybody because I'm traveling constantly and, you know, what do I eat? What do I do? I always carry a container up with me of goji berries, cacao, schizandra berries, cut up pieces of cacao butter, and sometimes I'll throw in vanilla beans. I'll just put vanilla beans around the outer perimeter of that particular container, and that can be my snack food. If I get in a bind and don't have anything, I'll make sure I bring medicinal mushrooms, which are really good medicine. It's very important if you're traveling around in countries where your immune system could be compromised. I'll bring really high-powered botanical vitamin C's like camu berry. I'll bring salt, sea salt. This is really, really important. This is another area, by the way, where a lot of raw foodists go into total judgment. They know that salt's bad for them. They're not supposed to have it. Then the next thing you know, they end up too thin, adrenally wiped out, and not able to hold hydration into their body. Salt and sea salt is a very important part of a balanced and natural diet. Every animal in nature is on the hunt for salt. That's just part of what their natural diet indicates. Salt holds hydration on. It also is the number one food for your adrenals. When people are on a plane and traveling, their adrenals can get flipped on while they're sitting there in a plane because, you know, the plane's taking off, it's landing, it's kind of a tense moment, and they can be sucking salt out of their system not realizing it. Salt deficiencies have a whole lot to do with digestive health and especially getting out of constipation. In order to have your digestive bowels moving perfectly, you need to have salt present in your digestive tract in order for everything to move. And this is an issue that a lot of people face when they're traveling. They get dehydrated and get constipated, or they go low on salt and get constipated. These issues are relieved if you just start salting your water.
Really? How much is a pinch?
Big container of salt with me, and I always put it in my water. And it's a funny little container because in customs they think that there's going to be something else in there. and they're always surprised. They're like, well, what is this? And I'm like, oh, it's sea salt. It's the best ever. That's always fun.
Just a quick aside, the funniest thing about customs is that they've never stopped me with a zapper.
Yeah, they don't even care about a zapper. If they ask me what it is, I always say it's a Schumann resonance device, which basically alleviates the effects of jet lag. They don't even care about that. I'll tell you what they will stop you with is if you have big pucks, big blocks of cacao butter, they will stop you because that's what they're looking for. It looks like a plastic explosive, and if you have that next to electronics, that'll definitely flip them on.
Wow.
That's happened to me a number of times, so I stopped doing that. Anyway, other things that are valuable, I always carry with me NCD, Natural Cellular Defense, liquid zeolite. That's another thing that I always have. And I have sometimes aged garlic extracts, chiolic. That's also a really good and powerful, useful tool. And then I'll bring with me, for example, Dr. Patrick Flanagan's products for hydration. Again, the main thing about traveling is you can become dehydrated. And for me personally, because I'm kind of a water snob, I just can't drink any water anywhere. So sometimes I have to go long periods of time without drinking water. And that's one of the most challenging things for me with traveling now because of, you know, the challenges of bringing water on flights now and all that. But I found a way to get around that by taking in products that are really hydrating and making sure I'm hydrated before I fly.
How much salt do you put in your water? A pinch or two pinches?
I put in a pinch per liter, sometimes more. Uh-huh. I can handle a lot of salt. My metabolism can handle a lot of salt. Not everybody is like me. Some people have lower salt tolerance, and therefore, you know, they can stick with a lower amount in their water.
Okay. I want to kind of change gears a little, maybe even out of this nutrition thing a little bit, because there's a lot of people on these calls for this Whole Raw Summit that are interested in making a difference. And that's one thing that you have done. And I think what would be extremely valuable for this call and for the audiences listening is some insight on how you did it. Because some people out there are sitting there saying, I want to make a difference. What can I do? And so what I want to talk about first, I want to talk about the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation. And why don't you give us a little story about the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation, and then we'll really get into how you went about founding a foundation like this that is going to plant 18 billion trees.
That's great. I never really get to talk about it, and it's a very intense journey, this whole founding of the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation and what it's taken to get it to this point. I first got interested in doing a nonprofit by studying the great entrepreneurs of our time. Uh-huh. And I noticed that all the great entrepreneurs have a nonprofit arm of their efforts, so that some of the money gets channeled into a philanthropic project of some sort. And that brought me to the point of, okay, if I was going to plan a nonprofit, what would it be? What would it look like? And so I really did a lot of soul searching as to what really gives me great joy. And the thing that probably gives me more joy than anything else in the entire world is planting trees. And I thought, well, okay, I love planting trees. I love planting fruit trees. It's like a passion. Let's form a nonprofit organization that plants fruit trees. Now, we need 18 billion fruits, or we need 18 billion trees to be planted in order to reverse the atmospheric damage that we've done with cooking fires and coal burning and nuclear and automobiles. And so that's where the number of 18 billion came from.
Wow.
Now, we're already over 10,000. You know, we're getting there. We're step by step, it's just inching up. And over time, what we're going to be focusing more and more on is creating outdoor classrooms at elementary schools so that one day a week the class is outside in the orchard that we have planted, learning about green foods, green sustainability, ecology, environmentally friendly technologies, et cetera, et cetera. And we found that more and more and more schools are opening to this. In fact, next year in 2008, we will do probably around 35 to 40 different elementary schools planting.
And we're in all around the world, or?
All around the United States, possibly Canada. Now, our organization is international. We have a huge project going on in Kenya right now where we're planting fruit trees at schools, in local neighborhoods, et cetera. We have a big project where we're planting fruit trees in an area of India where people are literally starving to death. And we've got that project afoot, and more on the way. Now, when I got started with the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation, I've been through now three different directors of that organization.
Okay.
The first two, let's just put it this way, were not really, you know, cutting the mustard green, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
I fed lots of money into it, hundreds of thousands of dollars, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, and many times had nothing to show for it, or really had to sort out all the receipts and what things are being spent on and how projects are moving forward, et cetera, et cetera. And then eventually it got to a point where the appropriate person stepped forward and said, I will take the hold of the reins on this. And that's Jim Aiken, who's the current director of the organization. And he's just an incredible asset. He came on board because he had spent years and years and years pointing at the problem. And that day he worked for PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Mm-hmm.
PETA is a great organization, but they are spending way too much time pointing at the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to embody the solution. We've got to take our total focus and turn it on the solution. And that's what planting fruit trees is all about. It's a solution that everybody can agree on. It's a solution that nobody's going to argue with or debate about. If we can get the President of the United States to do it just as equally as we can get a first grader to do it, and both of them will have just as much fun doing it. And if we cannot get to a solution orientation with the focus of our day-to-day work and our nonprofit activities, we are not going to achieve our goal of paradise on Earth. So that's why we just said, whoa, throw out the old model of pointing at problems and let's get totally on to solutions.
How can you start to realize if you are thinking about the problems? Because I know that a lot of, we all get caught in it sometimes. You know, like, oh, this is the problem here, and this is the problem here. How can you catch yourself and then start to change your mindset into a solution-based mindset?
That's such a great point. I mean, nobody is immune from pointing at problems. I'm certainly as guilty as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this assiduous discipline of looking at what you're spending your time, your thoughts, and your deeds on. Where are your thoughts, words, and actions heading you towards? And if you find that you're speaking negatively of other people and other things, stop. Just be aware of it. Awareness a lot of times is enough. Awareness alone is a lot of times enough to alter behavior. Being aware that negativity cannot solve any problems. You know, suffering cannot create healing. And there's no way that's possible. So the only way we can create healing, the only way we can create change is to focus on a solution that we can all get behind. Even people who are, quote-unquote, you know, trashing the planet with corporations and everything, we can't be pointing at them saying, you're wrong. Everybody who is told they're wrong doesn't like it. Nobody is going to be happy about hearing they're wrong, but they are going to be happy if they can participate in a solution.
Sure. You said that you spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation off the ground. Now, is that necessary? I mean, can someone do something that's extremely good and helpful and solution-based with no money?
Of course, definitely. I mean, I spent all that money and trees were planted, so it wasn't money spent that was waste.
Sure.
But it was very disorganized. It was not exactly what I wanted it to be, but I knew that the universe was testing me and that the right person would eventually show up, and that's how the world works. If you just give up when things are disorganized and chaotic, you know, then you're not going to get the reward. But if you tough it out and you go, okay, I'm willing to put it all on the line here, and even though the money seems like it's going down the drain, at least trees are being planted, and I know one day it'll work out, then the universe will open up that opportunity, which is, in this case, what happened.
When you are talking about that, it really rings pretty strongly with me. And what I'm catching is that you set a pretty serious intention. So let's talk about how setting intention, and now we can be very general about this and then get into some more detail. Let's talk about how setting intention can really help you accomplish things, because I imagine people would have quit. Some people would have quit between the time when you were going through your second director, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And of course the temptation has always been there to give up and then, you know, throw in the towel and say, okay, let me just spend my money on something else. But nevertheless, just toughing it out by way of setting goals, by way of knowing what I'm ordering on the menu of the universe, toughing it out with a goal in mind is a lot different than toughing it out without a goal in mind. Our intention must be set on paper somewhere or in a computer or somewhere where we can review it so that we know, okay, this is my order. This is the order that I put in on the menu of the universe, and I know that the universe is going to deliver sooner or later. I believe that goal setting is primary, that everything else falls behind goal setting, because if you don't know where you're going, you can't get there. If you don't have a map, you're not going to find your way to Shanghai. It's just by how the universe is set up. Writing things down not only crystallizes the thought and puts it into something that's semi-real because suddenly it's on paper, but it also activates powers and forces that are unseen in the universe. And those forces will precipitate a goal into your lap. And you go, how in the world did this happen? I've had goals that I set that with all the plans of how I would accomplish those goals and had the goals accomplished, but totally in a different way than the way I had planned. In fact, step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 were totally skipped, and all of a sudden the goal would just happen. And that is indicated to me after 17 years of goal setting that there are powers at work that are beyond our understanding whenever we put something on paper that is our intention.
What are some of your intentions now? I know that you want to plant 18 billion trees, but what are some of the other ones so people can maybe have some inspiration and get some ideas of maybe what is possible?
Well, I've done 17 years of goal setting. It achieved incredible successes in my life, but one of the things that was discovered along the way that radically altered my whole approach to goal setting is that the main goal is a way of being goal. That what manifests all other goals simultaneously is character transforming goals. For example, one of my goals is I effervesce with radiance and joy. I smile more than anyone else ever. You know, the goals like that, I drink the best beverages ever. I eat the best food ever. Those goals are ways of being. That's a state of consciousness. And for example, even if it's a physical thing like a car, instead of saying, I own a 1999 Lamborghini Countach sports car, my goal is I drive the best car ever. And if you look at the way that that's worded and the way that those are phrased, you'll see that my goals are actually states of consciousness. And that automatically solves everything else. I've found that over the years I don't even want anything. I mean, I don't need physical things. What I'm really after is character-transforming ideas and intentions and transformative types of goals. And that automatically delivers the people, the places, the things, the experiences, everything. And it's a way of shortcutting it so you're not wasting time writing down, I own a yacht in Marin County on the San Francisco Bay or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. So it's not about the Lamborghini. It's about the feeling you get when you get into your car.
That's exactly it. You hit it right on the head. the feeling is what we're really after. We're not after the car. So why not just go straight to the feeling with your goal?
That's incredible. A lot of people in the raw and living food world and in just every world, I mean, we're all one world, so there's really no division here. A lot of people are doing things based out of guilt, fear, or shame. Why is that causing a lot of pain for a lot of people?
I think, as I was saying before, there's nothing positive that can come out of emotions of guilt, fear, and shame. When we had lunch with Bob Proctor, he stated that he felt guilt was one of the most destructive energies that he'd ever been around. These emotions are destructive. They don't do anything. And I believe that a lot of people act out of guilt, fear, and shame because of emotional trauma that was imparted by mom or dad, lack of love felt from mom or dad. It could have also been things that have been handed down epigenetically, miasms in the family line or family kind of problems that get handed down generation to generation. And we're at a point now where it's got to stop right here, because the outward manifestation of that karma, of the negative energies, is suddenly showing up in our biosphere as pollution. That the whole planet is actually coming into danger because we are not dealing with stuff inside ourselves. And this is where we turn towards solution orientation. We've got to get into a place where everything we're eating is eaten with an intention, with joy in our heart, with love, even if it's Domino's pizza. Whatever it is, it's got to be eaten with joy in our heart and love and with a blessing, so that it comes in congruently, meaning it's in alignment with our dominant thoughts, and our body identifies it not as poison, but as joy or an offering of love.
You say that eating with intention is incredible, and I imagine, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that eating living foods is one of the ways that you can get out of that guilt, fear, or shame. But there are a lot of people who are very having very good living food diets, and they're still miserable and neurotic. What can they do? What's going on there?
Well, there's a vibrational discrepancy that's occurring. And what ends up happening is that the foods are so high in vibration that they begin to, over time, to drive out the energies of anger, the energies of self-doubt, the energies of self-esteem problems or issues. And that tension can cause someone to become neurotic, meaning that they cannot deal with those energies, so they kind of freak out. Now, the way that we solve that problem is we get out of our mind. We stop thinking about any of that stuff, and we get solution-oriented and get into our heart, and get into heart-based thoughts, words, and deeds, so that everything is coming from our heart. How can I help someone? How can I support someone? Inevitably, when someone heals themselves of a neurosis or of a tension inside themselves or of a disease, their focus has stepped out of themselves and into a grander picture. And from that grander picture, a healing comes in, because they've stepped out of selfishness and have stepped into community-oriented, feeling, heart-centered behavior. And this is what I'd recommend for anybody who's in that state. And sometimes it's a difficult place to start from, because we've been handed a bunch of karma from our parents, or lack thereof. We're dealing with issues that we've, you know, traumatized ourselves with for many years. And not everybody's starting with the same clean slate. But the way we can get out of it is by doing good things for the community, doing good things for others, and getting oriented towards our heart. Look, Mother Teresa will always be appreciated every single day for the rest of the history of the earth, because she decided that it wasn't about her anymore and her own neuroses or whatever was going on inside of her, but it was about helping the misfortunate, the people who had no hope whatsoever, and she will be remembered forever for that work.
When you talk about changing your vibration, these other emotions come out. Do you call them lower order emotions, or is there any hierarchy, or is this just an old type of paradigm?
You know, I don't want to say it's higher or lower.
Yeah.
My experience has been that it is that guilt, fear, shame, doubt, anger are lower energy emotions.
Okay.
And that if your digestion is upset, you're much more likely to feel anger or fear or anything like that. If you're food behavior is very erratic, when that erratic behavior is happening, you're much more likely to be in shame, or, you know, whatever's going on inside our body is always outwardly manifesting as an emotion. So if we can create peace and tranquility and hydration and joy inside each cell, then it's just a lot easier to feel those high energy emotions.
Sure. Let's talk about Ormus. I'm not sure that I 100% grasp the concept. So why don't you, for the listeners and for myself, why don't you give us a little explanation of Ormus and how Ormus can help you reach some of these incredible vibration levels?
Okay. Essentially, Ormus is a grandiose term encompassing a large body of unexplained phenomenon involving mineral and atomic science.
Okay.
I think at this point we're aware that most nutrition depends on minerals. If you have enough minerals in the soil, the food will grow with enough minerals in it. You eat the food, you feel good because all those minerals get into your immune system and nervous system. You build the proper tissue, etc. Now, our insight that's really come in the last like 20 years has been that the periodic table of the elements, the periodic table that Mendeleev had put together that identified every known atom, which we call a mineral, is inaccurate. That periodic table of the elements is not all the mineral material that's in the world, but is in fact kind of a morgue, for lack of a better term, meaning if you cut, burn, poison, and then analyze anything, let's say it's aloe vera, a piece of wood, a rock, whatever, you're basically killing it, then you're identifying what's in there. Now, when that rock, that wood, that aloe vera is living, it may actually have different things in it, but we don't have an analytical method with which to understand it.
Wow.
So Ormus is denoting a specific type of mineral group that lives. That actually lives in the same way that your cells live, that has consciousness, or at least more consciousness than its ashed counterpart that is studied by science. This is an insight that Victor Schauberger had when he identified many different aspects of carbon as actually being called carbone, which is a levitative form of carbon, which is a carbon that looks like carbon but doesn't act like carbon. That was his word for Ormus. Ormus is misidentified very often as carbon because it's black to light, so it looks black. So if you char a piece of wood, it turns black, turns into charcoal. Most of that blackness is the carbon. It's been ashed, but some of it is actually Ormus that's been basically, you know, kind of put into a dormant state. Now,
okay.
Ormus minerals can be in various stages. They can be either dormant like that, or they can be highly charged with energy. And highly charged energy particles are found in the atmosphere, they're found in the earth, in certain lava rocks, and they're found in spring water and in certain other areas. And those highly energized Ormus particles have what's called the Meissner field, which is a field of electromagnetism with no north or south poles. There's no polarity. So it's kind of like, they're kind of like a basketball. And if you bounce a basketball against the ground, it bounces up. That's kind of what these high energy particles do when they hit a magnetic field. They just bounce right off of it, just like a basketball bouncing off the ground. And therefore, that little insight right there allows us to understand how to trap some of these high energy particles without using the cut, burn, poison, analyze techniques of science, without breaking down the intrinsic value and electromagnetic field of the Ormus element, we can trap it and then concentrate it and then feed it into our cells, into plants, into certain areas, and then notice the results. And that's the kind of work that I'm involved in.
It's pretty amazing to think about it that way. When I remember in seventh grade, we used to dissect, you know, little like earthworms and stuff, and you cut it open and you look at it and you're like, oh, cool, here's the lungs, here's the intestines, here is its brain, but you still don't know how it works. Or you can't explain how it works. You just figure that little things generate through the nerves and the veins and everything like that. And that, I guess you're saying the same thing. If you destroy this thing and you analyze it, then it's the same. And you don't know how it works anyway, right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. The whole is more than the sum of its parts. This is really where the biggest transformations in science are happening. When we look at everything in the universe, including our planet, including rocks, including sand and plants, as evolving and living organisms, then we take on a different insight as to where science can go, because what we've been doing is killing everything and analyzing it, which has value, but it's not going to take us all the way to the goal. We've done that. We're out of that model now. And now we're moving to the next step.
What can Ormus do for you? What does Ormus do for me or you or someone else? What does drinking Ormus water do for someone?
Okay, good. What's the benefit here? Well, the idea is if we can capture enough high-energy particles, either out of ocean water or the atmosphere or spring water, well, then we can concentrate them, feed them to plants or ourselves, and escalate the amount of high-energy particles or life force energy-providing particles that are available to ourselves. And therefore, we can become more living. We can actually increase our life force energy. Now, when the life force energy reaches kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of a barrier, Ormus elements can actually, if we can get enough of it into our body, into our energy field, it can actually push us through that barrier and eventually start bringing us into a place where, for example, we're manifesting hypersynchronicities, we're manifesting psychic phenomenon. We're manifesting deeper understanding. We get into a state of really what might be called like either genius or paranormal phenomenon or something like that. I believe that paranormal phenomenon and especially psychic powers are related to each individual's concentration of Ormus elements and how those Ormus elements are interfacing with their consciousness. Ormus elements may be understood as high-energy particles, but they also have consciousness. So they may actually be able to think or communicate or in some strange way in the field of consciousness, and they may be able to do that in a way that we cannot control. So, for example, a lot of people who have psychic powers aren't really in control of their powers. They believe that they are, they think they are, but when they try to force it, doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about everyone, you know, this can bring us into a genius type, quote unquote, mindset. Do you believe that everyone can be there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I believe strongly in the statement by Walter Russell that mediocrity is self-inflicted and genius is self-bestowed.
That's amazing. Where can you get the most Ormus?
That's a great question. I mean, I personally am oriented towards water technologies and spring water. My personal belief that the best source of Ormus on the whole planet is the fruiting body of water, which is a spring, a cold spring.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the mass of water is the ocean, and its fruiting body, its flower and fruit is the cold spring. And that is very likely to be the place where the most Ormus is concentrated. Having said that, it's also very likely that there is a tremendous amount of Ormus in the atmosphere. And this is the reason why, for example, storms have been noted to be affected by consciousness and rain can be called in by a rain dance. It's because there's some consciousness in the atmosphere that responds. What I'm doing is I'm actually taking spring water off a real spring, not an artesian well, not a well, but a real spring, and then taking that water and concentrating the Ormus out of it and drinking it. And that's actually what I've been drinking all day today. It's really totally ridiculous. I mean, it's just beyond absurd.
I've seen this contraption that kind of looks like a weird landmine on a big tub, but the technology behind it is awesome. Can someone do this themselves? I mean, where's the technology of capturing this going?
This is really a good question. The reason why I'm so into developing the technology for trapping Ormus is because let's say you get to a stage of trapping the technology, and right now, like just, I think it was yesterday or the day before, at my house, we finally got the full-on Ormus contraption going. It's like a super trap. It's like probably five times as complex as what you saw.
Wow.
And but the interesting thing about that is by consuming the product of that particular Ormus trap, it teaches you or educates you on how to make it better and even get to the next and highest level. It is a new science. It is developing, of course, and we're learning as we go, but the only way that we can really get there is by consuming the fruits of our own product, which is the great alchemical dictum.
What would happen if Ormus could be bottled and given to everyone?
Ormus can be bottled and can be given to everyone. That is possible, and it's only really in the last, I've been trying to think of how to actually bottle, you know, because these particles are such high energy that if you bottle them and then essentially open that bottle, they can release an electromagnetic shockwave.
Uh-huh.
And I've mentioned that before on various different websites and interviews. That's happened to me on numerous occasions where I've actually been electrostatically shocked by water.
Wow.
that's so unbelievable. So how are we going to actually be able to contain these particles? Well, there's rudimentary technology available. You can contain them in layered metals because metals are so electron dense that the Ormus element can't escape through the metal very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other technologies that I've been looking into that I'm gonna hold my cards on right now because it's really, really clever and interesting. I just kind of became aware of this literally just a few months ago. It just kind of all came down, maybe even it was a month ago, of exactly how to contain the Ormus water or Ormus element in a way that can last forever and it will never escape, etc.
Let's turn the gears a little bit, and we're kind of coming to the end of this interview. What I want to know is I want you to give some insight about what you do on a regular basis, what your protocol is, or what your system is for achieving the things that you do and being as healthy as you are.
Okay, well, I just on the health part of things, over the years I've noticed that I eat less and less,
mm-hmm.
and I live more and more. And I start my day with the best water ever, and I drink as much of it as possible before I eat any food. In fact, I totally saturate myself with water, and then I'll move into my day by having, for example, lots of herbs. I'll do liquid zeolite, a little bit of salt in my water. I'll do, you know, little things like that. But basically in the morning, I don't really have any food. And then going into the afternoon, sometimes I'll snack on this or that, or I'll make a smoothie, and that'll guide me through the day. And then towards the end of the day, when I'm at home, I just basically go pick wild foods, like wild herbs, and I make a salad out of it. And then, you know, I'll have that. And then if I really want to power into the night, like go until like 4 or 5 in the morning, I'll sometime in the late evening, like 10 or 11, put together a cacao smoothie. If I'm not powering into the late evening, just staying up till 1 or 2, then I won't eat anything, maybe drink some more water. So that's kind of my health regimen.
Mm-hmm.
I consume, you know, obviously a whole variety of different herbs and superfoods, and that my diet mostly consists of herbs and superfoods now.
What are some of your favorite herbs?
My favorite herbs are the medicinal mushrooms.
Okay.
I live in a mushroom forest, so I can, you know, there's 300 different types of mushrooms that grow right here in this forest, so it's incredible choices we have here. It's just the best ever.
I've seen just about all of them, including the reishi.
I mean, there's reishi that grows right down the hill here. It's just unbelievable. It's totally crazy. I mean, the greatest, most powerful foods in the world and herbs and superfoods are usually growing right outside somebody's back door, and they don't realize it. And that's why we're doing the education. It's like everybody can become their own superhero based on what's in their backyard at any time.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. I mean, really, really, what is in front of us is the greatest opportunity in the entire history of humankind ever.
Wow. It's incredible technology.
Day-to-day, my normal program, other than just my health program,
mm-hmm.
looks like exactly this. I do exactly what I feel like I should do.
Mm-hmm.
And I never force myself to do anything too much unless I know I kind of have to get it done. You know, if like I'm writing a book and I have to get the final edits done and I know it has to be done by midnight, you know, I'll do it. I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tough, but, you know, sometimes I'll just have to tough that out. And I do believe somewhat in the statement that success means doing what you need to do when you need to do it. And that's been my experience as being true. But most of the time I just do whatever I want to do. So the other day I got up in the morning, picked wild raspberries, weeded the garden, did all kinds of errands, and then by the end of the day, after having planted a bunch of trees and done all this kind of stuff, it was probably 6 or 7 at night. Then I hit the computer for like 8 hours.
Wow.
You know, so sometimes I'll do that, and sometimes I'll stay up all night, or sometimes I'll work through the night on various projects around the house and then hit the computer all day. But it's never the same, and I guess I'm a lot like, you know, some of the individuals like Edison who just would just keep strange hours, or Newton who would keep strange hours. I never sleep the same hours the same. I never go to sleep the same way. It's always something different. And usually I go until I absolutely just drop and pass out.
So what do you think about the philosophy or the theory that you get your best sleep and you recharge between 10 in the evening and 2 in the morning?
That's a great theory and philosophy, but just like anything else, I've checked it against my own common sense for my body, and that doesn't have anything to do with me.
Yeah.
And that is really an important point. For example, it's great to have that information, and you might try it out and go, wow, that really works for me. But if you try it out and go, you know, it doesn't make a darn bit of difference, you need to be able to take any information with a grain of sea salt and be able to go, okay, you know, it's cool, the information is cool, but it doesn't work for me, so, you know, I'll let it go.
What's the best way to approach that? Because there's so much information. There's information in magazines. There's information in books. There's information on TV, on the radio, on these calls. What's the best approach? What can someone do right now?
In terms of filtering the information?
Yeah. Well, filtering and then using it in a way that's going to benefit them.
Well, I think the best thing is always to do what you can do in every moment. For example, let's say you were reading a magazine that said Hawthorne berries are the best thing ever for your heart. The next thing you know, you're at the health food store, and there's a whole Hawthorne berry powder supplement superfood thing there. And then, you know, you're in line, and the person in front of you says, hey, do you know anything about Hawthorne berries? At that point, I would then take the clue and go get the Hawthorne berries and start guzzling them.
Yeah.
You know, listening to the clues and the synchronicities is how we put it all together. I believe, and I believe strongly, that part of the way that the universe is set up is like a giant mystery story, and that finding clues, researching as a detective, developing leads, following out synchronicities is very close to the heartbeat and the pulse of God. That is what God really is about providing you little clues, little synchronicities, and you can either act on them or you can totally ignore them. I found that once I started completely acting and following up on synchronicities to the nth degree, that it led me down routes and towards concepts and ideas and innovations and business successes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that I never could have perceived before.
And what about someone who says, I don't get any synchronicities? What's going on? Do they really not get synchronicities, or are they not paying attention to them?
Well, synchronicities are always happening. It's just an awareness. But the more tuned in you are with your mission, it appears the more likely the synchronicities are going to show up your way. If my mission, for example, was to, you know, be the greatest proponent of raw food, superfoods, herbs, and chocolate in the history of the universe, if I'm doing that, I'm going to be gaining some real synchronicities. But if I am, for example, that's my mission, but I'm spending all my time watching NASCAR stock car racing, there isn't going to be no synchronicities coming my way, or very few, because I'm not actually acting on my mission. I'm not moving forward in a way where, you know, God is going to go, okay, here's some clues and synchronicities to help you even get further down the road. What's probably going to happen is God's going to hit me over the head with a sledgehammer.
Yeah. Do you find that the closer you feel like you are to your mission, the more synchronicities that come?
Yes, definitely. I actually feel like our dharma or mission is the most important thing going. It's like if we have a mission and we're not acting on it, then we're very likely to be reaching for foods that don't work for us.
Okay.
You know, if we have a mission and we're not acting on it, then we're very likely, and we're much more susceptible to becoming addicted to whatever.
Is it possible that the ultimate goal is to reach the ultimate synchronicity, where everything is completely synchronistic? I mean, does that make sense? Can you imagine? Is that humanly possible to even imagine that?
I think that's where we're all headed, actually. I mean, whether we like it or not, hypersynchronicity is around us all the time.
Uh-huh.
And our ultimate goal will be to be in a state of doing everything by doing nothing, because we stand right in the middle of a hypersynchronicity.
Wow. I want to end on that.
And, you know, and by the way, on the synchronicity front, I was reviewing some notes that I had and some past journal entries and stuff. I have had insane synchronicities for the last 10 years that are of such a crazy character that it has totally transformed my belief about what reality is.
Wow.
And so when I speak about synchronicities, I mean, I've had insane stuff. I mean, I'll just tell you a story. One time I was on my way to San Francisco in our biodiesel bus, and I was checking emails, and a friend of mine had sent me this email about recycling and about recycling everything. It was an awesome poem, and I accidentally erased it. And I was like, oh, God, I wanted to put that on my website. The next day I'm in San Francisco. We go into a raw food restaurant. I'm sitting there. I have a total connection with this woman who's working there. We're having the best time. She made the best smoothies ever. And that was the old raw food restaurant called Urban Forage. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're upstairs a little bit later checking out this yoga studio that they're putting in. It's just in shambles. There's wood everywhere and saws and saw horses and all kinds of stuff everywhere. And we're talking, and it was just amazing. And then we're standing there, and I look down on the ground. There's this crumbled up piece of paper. For some reason, I just had this idea of just picking it up and opening it. So I pick it up, and I open it. And it's that poem that was emailed to me the day before, on the floor, crumbled up as a piece of paper. So you can imagine what happened next, and I started getting it, because I asked her, I said, hey, do you know who wrote this? And of course, the person was her.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like that all the time, nonstop. I mean, people said, you know, you got to write it all down. I've been trying my best to write it all down, but when it's happening every day, you can't write it down. I mean, you just you forget about stuff.
You just write a book and you say, wow. That is amazing. This has been an incredible call, David. I want to thank you so much. Where can people find out more information about the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation?
If you're interested in getting involved in the Fruit Tree Planting Foundation, you can go to www.ftpf.org, which is F as in fruit, tree, T, planting, P, F as in foundation, .org.
And you have a bunch of other books and information, and we've actually set up a page where everyone can go to get the information for David, and that's going to be at www.rawsummit.com/David, D-A-V-I-D, www.rawsummit.com/David, and we'll put up some information where you can go and check out some information about his books, about Sun Food Nutrition, about all this incredible food that I eat on a regular basis that gives me some of my energy, and you can get there and get all those resources and get some of the information that you need. So, David, thank you so much for coming aboard. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Good luck with the Raw Summit. Have the best day ever.
Awesome.